I think it's both. Because if you don't start it and don't start working hard, you're never going to stumble into luck. Like if I didn't start Gamefly, we never would have stumbled right place, right time, recession happens, and all of a sudden more people want to rent games than buy them. And if I hadn't started Drop-Off in 2014, in 2020 when COVID hits, right, you couldn't have planned that. That was lucky. But we were in the right place at the right time. And the reason we were is because I started a company with some co-founders and we built a business.
Welcome into Studying Success. On this podcast, I interview investors and entrepreneurs who tell us about their life, the ins and outs of their industries, and the different ways that they have found success. Sean, it's so great to see you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Will.
Where are you right now? Are you in Austin?
No, we are actually in Lake Tahoe, which is in California.
Oh, fun. What you doing there?
Sort of mix play and work for a couple of weeks with the family. So nice place to be outside of Austin, considering it's been 100 degrees every day for like the last 2 months.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough this summer. So let's just jump right into it. Sean, tell me about your business. What do you do?
So the name of my current company is called Drop-Off. We do same day delivery, last mile for businesses. So the way a business would use FedEx or UPS for parcel delivery for 2 day or 3 day or overnight, businesses use us for same day delivery. So, you know, we pick something up and usually deliver it within a couple of hours. And most of that is within a market, but sometimes we'll take it market to market. And we're in over 50 cities across 20 something states today.
What are the use cases of needing something to be delivered same day?
Yeah, so for healthcare, it could be a lab specimen that you've given to a doctor. You went to a hospital or a clinic or a doctor's office and you gave some blood, or they took a sample of some skin and that needs to get to a lab to get tested. So we pick up from doctor's offices and clinics and hospitals and take things to labs every day of the week. Another use case could be prescriptions delivered from a pharmacy to your home, right? So you don't have to leave the house to get the prescription. It comes to you. On the e-commerce side, it could be you bought your girlfriend a really nice purse from Louis Vuitton and it's going to get delivered to her directly versus shipped, you know, which would take 2 to 3 days. You know, so parts for equipment could be for an elevator or an MRI machine. It's not working and they need a part immediately on site so a technician can repair it. We'll go pick up the part and we'll deliver it to the job site. So a lot of different use cases across different industries. I think sort of the through line is it's a critical high value item that needs to get from point A to point B and it needs to get there today, not tomorrow or the next day.
So do you have a network of delivery trucks and drivers? Is it like you hire them directly or is it somehow a marketplace? What is the business model?
Yeah, so it's more of a marketplace model, similar to like an Uber or a Lyft. The drivers are independent contractors. They use their own vehicles. They download our app onto their smartphone and they decide what days they want to work. You know, they want to work a half day. They want to work a full day. They want to work 3 days a week. They want to work 5 days a week. And it's a whole mix of folks. It's college students. It's people in between jobs, could be retired folks that just want something to do and get out of the house a couple of days a week. So it's a whole mix from that standpoint of sort of the types of persons that drive for us and why they're doing it.
And how did you get started with this idea? Like what gave you the idea to start Drop-Off?
Well, similarly to how I started my previous company, which was called Gamefly, which was video game rentals through the mail. Both were started out of customer pain. For Drop-Off, I had to use a courier service back in 2013. And I thought I found a really good answer or a really good provider and everything got messed up. And so I started doing a lot of research about the industry, saw that it was, you know, kind of ripe for disruption from a technology standpoint, from a service standpoint, and from a geography standpoint. And so that led me to start this company. And similarly with Gamefly, I got the Xbox the first year it came out back in 2001, the original Xbox. And I got Halo and I played through it in like 3 days and I wanted more games. And I didn't want to buy a whole bunch of games. I wanted to try a bunch of games. And so I went to Blockbuster and realized they did a really bad job of video game rentals. And then someone gave me Netflix that Christmas, and I went to Netflix to look for video games and realized they didn't rent video games, they only rented movies. So that was sort of the light bulb moment for Gamefly, like, okay, we could rent discs through the mail, similar to Netflix, and ship them all over the US. So both were kind of pains from a consumer standpoint. obviously games are more consumer business and a messenger service is more B2B, but it's still sort of the same premise applies.
After doing the research and building the team and going with ideation, did you go raise money immediately after forming that team, or were you building a small MVP and giving that to customers immediately? What were you doing?
Yeah, so in both Gamefly and Dropoff, we kind of started building stuff without raising any capital. Not because that was going to be the ultimate way we got to where we wanted to get to, but it helps kind of start to prove things out pretty quickly. Meaning, do people respond to this sort of use case? Is there a product market fit here? Do people feel like this is something they would pay for or something they would use? I'm a big believer you kind of start to build it first. I mean, you don't have to build it all the way, but by starting building, you already start learning a lot, right? You learn maybe what works and what doesn't work, what people like, what people don't like. So you kind of then, when you're ready to talk to investors, you're informed. It's not a bunch of theory and guesswork or ideas, right? You've got some hard evidence. And it may be a small sample size. It could be, hey, we have three customers, right? But those are three customers that are paying you to do something versus somebody who's got an idea that has zero customers. So for me, it's more of a practical thing. And that's maybe more my personality. I kind of believe the proof is in the pudding. And actions speak louder than words. So if you can show people versus tell people, it tends to be more persuasive.
Dropoff is a marketplace. So initially, how did you like provide your service? Did you have to go out and find all these people who would do the deliveries?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting marketplaces. This is a two-sided marketplace. You have drivers and you have customers. And Dropoff kind of sits in the middle. The drivers were never the hard part. There were always people looking for ways to make additional money. Because it's a fairly low commitment. You want to work a half a day a week. You want to work one day a week. It's not a big commitment for somebody. The customers were the harder part because there was either two types of customers. There was customers that already had somebody else that they were using, and in theory, they were happy, or they had never contemplated doing same day, and so it was going to be brand new for them. And so both cases, you had to educate, you know, why you were different, why you were better. So if I had an existing provider, if I was a customer that had an existing courier service that I used, why would I switch to Dropoff? Well, we have to sort of sell them on why Dropoff is better than their current provider. In some cases, that worked. Some cases, they weren't happy with their provider, but they just kept them around because they didn't want to switch until something better came along, and nothing better had come along until Dropoff. And in other cases, they hadn't done same-day delivery before, had read about it, had heard about it, but they hadn't actually done it, so they needed to be educated. So that also required some salesmanship.
Who were your early adopters of Dropoff?
It was a little mix of everything. It was some catering services. It was some pharmacy delivery. It was some law firms moving documents. It was some grocery delivery. It was some retail delivery. Like we worked for like an art store that wanted to deliver the paintings to the houses and didn't want to have the customers put paintings in their cars for obvious reasons. So it was a mix of a bunch of different things. But what we started to hone in on was healthcare. We really saw an urgent need for what we were building, probably more so than the other categories. And we could offer something really that was differentiated in the marketplace that didn't really exist.
So did you somehow cater your product to fit those needs of specifically the medical field to grow that sector?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what you start to learn. When you start a business, you start to learn who your customers are. Right? You might think they're going to be a certain type of person or a certain type of business, and you might find out, hey, you know, there's a value to the service you're building or the product you're building, but it's a different audience than you originally thought. So you want to learn as much about that audience as you can and much about their need. And if you're solving some pain they're having, you know, what are you doing that's solving that pain and how do you do more of that? So absolutely. So we learned healthcare was a big opportunity for us probably several years into this. And so in 2018, we made a strategic decision to really focus on healthcare as the industry that would be our primary industry. And today, it's over 90% of our revenue.
What did you change specifically to focus on healthcare?
Changed your messaging. You changed your marketing. You changed your salespeople so they know healthcare. And you especially changed the product. So how do you make the product fit those needs better? So an example would be in healthcare, you know, what you're picking up or what you're delivering can be very sensitive. So you want to make sure that all that data is stored securely. Another example would be make sure people can sign electronically for receiving something from a healthcare delivery. You might even have to do a barcode scan. So you start realizing there's certain things that are critical to that industry that may not be as critical to other industries.
Was it initially like, oh my gosh, Dropbox is amazing, and everyone started to pile on to Dropbox, and you had customers left and right?
Or no.
Was it more of a slow growth?
Yeah, I think that's always sort of hyperbole and exaggerated. A lot of these businesses are not overnight successes. There's a lot of things that you don't read about and hear about in the early days where they're still trying to figure out how the business works and scales. But we did get to an inflection point probably in 2018 where it started growing faster, 2018, 2019 than we expected. And then COVID happened in 2020, and that also accelerated our growth. And you never could have predicted that COVID was going to happen, obviously. So, you know, sometimes it's just being the right place at the right time.
I think especially during COVID, doing doctor visits online has become a lot more prominent. How has that affected your business?
Well, so here's what's neat about that, right? So you don't have to drive to the doctor's office anymore. You could do a virtual visit, right? Like we're doing right now, right? Over video or audio. But ultimately, you know, if the doctor says, you know, Will, you know, you might have strep throat, let's get a throat culture, right? You need to go somewhere or someone's got to come to you to take that culture, right? And then once the results come back, we say, okay, well, you've got strep throat. I'm going to put you on some antibiotic, right? And so you either got to go to a pharmacy to get those or those have to come to you. So in either case, even though the visit was virtual, the lab specimens are not and the medications are not. And so ultimately, there's a physical component to that visit that's got to get addressed. And so drop-off fits nicely into that. We'll come to your house and if a nurse came to your house and took a sample, we'll come to your house and pick up the sample from the nurse and take it to the lab. The doctor says you need a prescription. We can go to the pharmacy, pick it up, and deliver it to your house. So the digitization of the doctor visit doesn't really have an impact on us. In fact, maybe it makes more people see doctors because it's easier. And so more people seeing doctors means more lab tests, means more medications potentially. So it probably helps us actually than hurts us.
And were investors like chomping at the bits to invest in Dropbox or
no.
What was that like? Was it hard?
Yeah, look, raising capital is hard no matter what the business is. Anyone that says it's easy is probably lying to you. So no, I mean, you have some investors that immediately get it and like it. And you have some investors that sometimes immediately get it and don't like it for some other reason. And so like anything, you got to talk to a lot of people about it. Like I call it, you got to kiss a lot of frogs to find the prince or princess. And so it's just the nature of the beast. You got to talk to a lot of people. And sometimes you can go to an investor that's invested in something similar. Sometimes that works for you. Sometimes that works against you, right? They did a similar investment, so they're not doing any more like this. Or they did a similar investment, it didn't work out. So they think this whole sector is not good. So, you know, you just have to be thoughtful of who you talk to and you got to do it in a timely manner, because that's the biggest obstacle for entrepreneurs is time and money.
Let's switch over to Gamefly. Were people initially like, oh my gosh, Gamefly is amazing. I want all of the video games I can get off Gamefly. I want Halo. I want FIFA. I want 2K.
Right.
Or was it more difficult?
No, actually, Gamefly grew. I think actually Dropbox and Gamefly kind of grew at a similar rate. There was inflection points where our growth accelerated, but it was more methodical, you know, like stair-stepping, you know, every month you're moving up the ladder. It was never a hockey stick per se, but Gamefly, the challenge with Gamefly is you were having to change behavior. Our audience that we targeted, you know, males, you know, 15 to 35, they all love video games. Like that's not the hard part, but they've been trained and programmed to buy video games. You know, and then back in the day, it was GameStop or Best Buy or other places like that. They weren't trained to rent because rent was kind of a shitty experience, pardon my French. So, you know, Blockbuster didn't do a good job. So people, gamers, didn't think of renting games as a really viable solution. So when Gamefly came along, if you just saw an ad, it might not have been enough to convince you. So you might have to see several ads. You might have to see some commercials. You might have to see some testimonials. You might have to read a review. You might have to read some content. You might have to have a friend tell you about it, right? That's always a good referral. So you did a lot of things to make sure that people were aware of the brand. And if they tried it, you made it easy on them. They got a free trial. If they referred a friend, you know, the friend got a free trial and the other friend got some credits. So you want to make things really frictionless so consumers can try your service. And so that's what we did at Gamefly. We did all those things and it worked. And kind of similarly, it's kind of weird. In 2000, so GameFly was started in 2002, and about 5 years in, 6 years in, 2007, 2008, we entered a recession. And what that did for us was it actually accelerated our growth because more people were saving money. So instead of buying, they started renting. And so renting is much more economical because you could try 20, 30 games a year from GameFly and pick the ones you wanted to buy. And that was one of our cool features is you could try before you buy. So if you rented Halo and you said, oh, I love this game, or you rented FIFA and I love this game, I want to own it, you just go to the website and click keep it, and that disc is now yours. So that accelerated our growth, the recession, just like COVID accelerated drop-off's growth. And these are things you can never predict or forecast.
So I listened to Guy Raz's podcast, How I Built This, and he often asks in his shows how much of the success of companies do you think is a consequence of luck and how much of it is a consequence of you working really hard. So I was going to ask, what do you think about this?
I think it's both. Because if you don't start it and don't start working hard, you're never going to stumble into luck. Like if I didn't start GameFly, we never would have stumbled right place, right time, recession happens, and all of a sudden more people want to rent games than buy them. And if I hadn't started drop-off in 2014, in 2020 when COVID hits, right, you couldn't have planned that. That was lucky. But we were in the right place at the right time. And the reason we were is because I started a company with some co-founders and we built the business. And we were ready when it happened. So, you know, there's certain things you can't control. And there's certain things you can control. And so starting businesses, I can control. But I can't certainly control necessarily what happens at a macro level. You just hopefully get lucky. And some people got unlucky. You know, the recession was unlucky for a lot of businesses. It put a lot of businesses out of business. COVID was unlucky for a lot of restaurants, put a lot of restaurants out of business. So you just never know. Can go either way.
What advice would you give, or what advice did you receive to get to where you are now?
Well, you know, I didn't start my first company till I was 30. So I had had several jobs prior to that. I did work at a big company, the Walt Disney Company, which was a great experience. I worked at a smaller company. I worked at a startup before I started my company. So I would encourage, suggest, recommend, you got to get out there and work for a few businesses to give you some perspective of what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. Maybe you'll do it differently or do it better. I think if you just come out of college and you just start a business, you're missing probably some fundamentals. So you're going to have to make a lot of mistakes and learn some of those the hard way, which isn't a bad thing. It's just different. So do you spend 5 years working and learn a lot, or do you spend 5 years making a lot of mistakes and learn a lot? Right? I chose the former path, which is I worked at some startups, some big companies, some small companies first.
Do you have any resources that you would recommend, such as blogs or podcasts or books, to learn more about entrepreneurship and business?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much available now, so much different than what existed in 2002 or even 2014. I mean, you're doing a podcast right now with me. That didn't exist, you know, 8 years ago to the degree it does now. So I think there's a lot of podcasts about how to start businesses and entrepreneurs being interviewed. You know, that's a good resource. The All In podcast is an interesting podcast. It's several successful, majorly successful entrepreneurs. You know, I've read a lot of business books, different successful CEOs or leaders in business. I think those are good. But, you know, nothing's better than experience. So I would highly recommend, if you're interested in being an entrepreneur, you got to put yourself out there and do it and make lots of mistakes and learn, whether that's working for a company or that's, you know, even just starting a simple little business on Etsy or something, selling stuff. You're going to learn a ton in those first 6 months about what you're doing wrong and what you're doing right. So you got to put yourself out there. It's not going to show up at your door. You know, you got to sort of take the steps to make it happen.
Sean, that's some great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And I learned so much from you.
You're welcome, Will. Thank you for having me, and excited to hear the finished product and to hear all the other cool people you're going to interview.
As always, thank you for listening, and please make sure you subscribe to get updated when new podcasts come out. I'm Will Burkhart, and you've been listening to Studying Success.